Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome in, Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show, Monday edition. I hope all of you had fabulous weekends, you had incredible times, and you lived your life as normal, freedom-loving Americans would, as opposed to being curled up in the fetal position, terrified as 18 months of COVID continues to spiral left-wingers insane. We got a ton to get into today, Buck Sexton and I do. Obama had a party. Hundreds of people were there. None of them wore masks, but according to a CNN expert, it doesn't matter. See, COVID knew it was a sophisticated crowd, really. We're going to break all of that down for you. Also, the battle over masks in schools. I've said it's going to be a revolution. Moms, dads, everybody lining up, including in my hometown. We will talk with Dr. McCary from the Johns Hopkins School. He's got a great op-ed in the Wall Street Journal arguing this morning, if you haven't read it already, guess what? Masks don't work in schools with kids. We will talk with him. Tucker Carlson is scheduled to join us in the third hour of the program, and we knew it was going to happen. Buck's an expert on this, and we're going to talk about it throughout the course of the program. Afghanistan has fallen even more rapidly than even the most dire forecast had been put out there. The Taliban has basically taken over much of the country already. And I promise you on this story, this is going to make you laugh. You're going to have to throw up your hands. It's a perfect Curb Your Enthusiasm episode if you're a Larry David fan. Major controversy over the weekend surrounding an alleged racial slur. Wasn't actually a racial slur. Someone was calling out the name of the mascot at the Colorado Rockies. We will discuss that story and more. But Buck, the Obama party has taken over. And if you watch some of the videos that managed to get filtered out before they all got deleted, I don't know about you, but this looked pretty much like a normal birthday party would have. If you happen to have hundreds of people, have a $12 million beach place, and have one of the largest tents I've ever seen erected for the party.
It's almost like the elites expect us all to live by rules that they themselves don't take seriously at all, or they think themselves exempt from. And now this has become the actual standard. And I think you could and should argue, Clay, that that's where we are as a country. When you see all the different people who were huge advocates for Fauciism, mask up, lock down, social distance, believing all of this claptrap. I mean, all this absolute malarkey. And then in their own lives, it was, well, I mean, come on, no one's really that worried about that, whether it's Gavin Newsom at French Laundry or Lori Lightfoot getting her hair cut or Nancy Pelosi getting her hair done or Gretchen Whitmer's husband trying to get the boat launched out early because his wife is the governor. Or, I mean, we could just go down the whole list. The biggest advocates of this, and let's not forget, there was actually the colleague of Dr. Fauci, who used to wear, remember the other doctor used to wear the Deborah Birx used to wear the fancy scarves, and she just decided to bail after it came out that she went for, I think it was Thanksgiving.
Remember, yeah, she peaced out.
Yeah, she was like, away. I'm done.
She traveled with her whole family to a shore, if I remember right, like it was Jersey or Delaware.
Yeah, she went somewhere where they had a house, but the point is that she just was like, you know what? I'm just not going to take the heat for this anymore because, yeah, I'm full of it and you know, and like, I give up, right? Whereas Fauci has an endless tolerance for the bull crap. But the Obama party's fascinating because if you were trying to find, and Clay, can it really be a gathering of the elites if neither you nor I was invited?
That's a great point.
You know, but if you're looking for a place that is like Davos in the U.S., right? That's the ultra globalist elites all and you know, the cultural and Hollywood and entertainment royalty all gathered in this country in one place. It would be Barack Obama's 60th birthday party, which I do have to laugh. It's a little funny having spent a little bit of time myself on Martha's Vineyard, knowing that I actually dated a townie when I was in college.
I've never been. What's it like?
My college girlfriend was a vineyard townie, so I would go.
Oh, like a year rounder.
Yeah, so I would go in the off season. It's amazing in the off season. It's incredible because all this beautiful beaches and all. It's a little cold, but anyway. But there's not a lot of roads there. There's a lot of traffic. Point here being, I started to get a little nostalgic for being back in the beach in college.
I'd love to go. I've never visited. I'm not elite enough to have even visited the vineyard before.
Oh, you've
so
got
really
you got to take Mrs. Travis. It's beautiful. That and Nantucket, two beautiful islands off the east coast of the United States, off of Boston. But I got to tell you, it was amazing, Clay, to watch how, in epic gaslighting fashion, all of these different media outlets and everybody were. I mean, what's the big deal, guys? What's the big problem? Obama's got to have a party. You know, he's going to have Steven Spielberg and Erykah Badu and Bradley Cooper and all the fanciest of the fancy. They got to be able to party. I mean, so what if we're telling you that everyone's going to die from COVID who's not vaccinated in like weeks? So what if we're saying your children need to be masked up for 8 hours a day or that you had to say goodbye to your loved ones on Zoom a year ago because it was just too dangerous to see them even for a minute, even with masks, even with everything else? Here was the best one, though. And I know you. This was just great because sometimes a New York Times reporter will just hit the center of the bullseye by accident. And here you go.
Other people said, you know, this is really being overblown. They're following all the safety precautions. People are going to sporting events that are bigger than this. This is going to be safe. This is a sophisticated, vaccinated crowd. And this is just about optics. It's not about safety.
I want to start wearing a t-shirt that says sophisticated, vaccinated individual so I can get out of all the rules. You know what I mean? Sophisticated, vaccinated, baby. Put a hat on, maybe. You know? Be good.
It is. So she just said what she really thinks, which is everybody else that is not of her ilk is a total rube. They are a deplorable. They're from the red states. They live in the middle part of the country. There's several things that I love about this party, Buck, but I want to start with this one. They said that they dialed back the number of people who were invited. I don't know whether that actually was true or not, but how did they go about telling people that had been invited that they didn't make the cut for the more exclusive list when clearly there were tons of super celebrities? Like maybe I'm wrong. And maybe Bradley Cooper and Barack Obama are just best buds. They're texting all the time. They are just inseparable, right? But Bradley Cooper, in my understanding, is around my age, 42-year-old Hollywood superstar. I don't think he's married. I don't think he has kids.
I mean, he sometimes is described as the poor man's Clay Travis.
Well, that's accurate, right? I don't think he's married. I don't think Bradley Cooper has kids. He's a talented actor. But what could he really have that much in common with the president of the United States, who's 60, right? 20 years age difference. Barack Obama's got young, you know, grown kids now. He's been married for 30 years or whatever the heck he has been. Like Bradley Cooper am I right? I don't think Bradley Cooper's even ever been married. He's a perpetual Hollywood playboy. Like if you are David Axelrod, for instance, and you have spent your entire adult career working with Barack Obama, and he evidently gets kicked off the guest list for Bradley Cooper. I'm not an expert on the Axelrod-Obama relationship, but it seems like they probably know each other a lot better than Barack Obama knows Erykah Badu, for instance. Just tossing it out there.
I mean, I would just say this is more a branding exercise than a birthday, right?
Yes.
It's about elevating the continuation of the Obama brand, which is a hundreds
celebrity
of millions of dollar
yes
value media, political, and entertainment brand, as we know, and the Netflix deals and everything else. But just taking us back here for a second, if I can, to what happened. The people who are supposed to be whatever you want. I mean, look, journalism is a fraud in this country, as we know. There are some journalists, but overall, the profession of journalism is make-believe. It's just propaganda. But they were willing to say things like, well, they're vaccinated. As if we have not had weeks now of being
true
told, you know,
yes,
by little Fauci, even if you're vaccinated indoors in a congregate setting with the droplets aerosolized, there's a probabilistic, futuristic possibility of the inclusion of, you know. And you're saying, hold on, I thought we're done when we're vaccinated. And they said, actually, you're not done in, you know, certain places. And now they're saying, well, I mean, you are done if you're at the Barack Obama party, though. This is why, how much of this whiplash, how much of this obvious bullcrap can people see before it's just too much to stomach anymore, Clay? That's really where we are.
I want to hear, so two more things that stood out to me about this, Buck, in addition to whoever's getting cut from the list, who may be actual friends of Obama. They could have just made it all outdoors. Why did they need the tent? They could have had some sort of colorable defense if they said, hey, it's an outdoor party. They have, I think, like 30 acres of land or whatever the heck it is on Martha's Vineyard. They didn't need to make it indoors, all right? And then on top of all that, right, as if all of this is not ridiculous enough, you have a situation where for weeks now, we've been being told, and we're going to play this clip for you. I can't wait to hear what Jen Psaki is going to say about this. And Biden, the White House, like, honestly, Barack Obama kind of threw him under the bus here.
No, Clay, they don't care. They don't care.
I'm going to give credit to Peter Ducey, who's going to sit down and actually grill Psaki, and we're going to get a good clip of her trying to spin this.
But they're not even going to spin it, is what I'm saying to you. They're going to look the American people in the eyes and say they adhere to all protocols and they're vaccinated. Boom. They don't care, right? This is the problem, Clay. They don't. It's not that we have, oh, look, they're not obeying the standard, so now they're going to feel bad and start. The whole point is that Barack Obama and his friends and his people don't have to obey the rules.
I understand that argument, but I think you still have to hammer them because there are, like, you know, let's say 40% of people out there that are going to excuse no matter what Barack Obama does or the left-wing Democrats. They're going to excuse Cori Bush on defund the police, everything else. But I do think the middle part of the country, right? Those people who are persuadable, they might vote Republican, they might vote Democrat. Hypocrisy does register with them, particularly super rich guy hypocrisy, which is what we got there. But first, what do you got for us, Buck?
Who's watching your money out there? I mean, it's not your financial advisor. He's probably just hanging out, making sure that he does the bare minimum while he takes the annual percentage, because that's how a lot of this stuff works. A lot of Wall Street insiders, however, are warning about a correction ahead, but they're not worried about you, right? So it's your choice. You can listen to the same old excuses from your current financial advisor, or you can subscribe to Carnivore Trading and see why their picks have become legendary. Carnivore levels the playing field. They deliver in real time what their experienced traders are thinking right now. Now all of us, from newbies to experienced traders, have access to their explosive trades. And for the first time, Carnivore will let you try their service for free. This is your chance to see and mirror Carnivore's explosive trades in real time for free. No obligation. All you have to do now is go to this website, getourtrades.com. Use the promo code USA. That's getourtrades.com, promo code USA. Getourtrades.com. Carnivore Trading, real trades, real time. See website for terms and conditions, past performance, no guarantee of future earning. Welcome back to the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. Buck here, and with me, my main man, Clay, and the double standards and hypocrisy and absurdity of the Fauciites, the left, the lockdowners, is just too much to bear. Has been for a long time, and Clay and I have been two guys who have, even before we were working together, seen this the same way. So we're going on 18 months here of, why can't people just stop being crazy? But we don't have an answer to that question. And we also don't have an answer to how is it that the situational ethics of COVID are going to continue to be applied in a way that is just so obvious? Like, for example, the Sturgis motorcycle rally, Clay. We know it's a large event. It happened last year. We were told, oh my gosh, it's going to react with or going to result in all these terrible things. And Dr. Fauci's even out there now telling everybody, you know, We gotta calm down. We can't live life until I say so. The usual stuff. Here he is.
Well, I'm very concerned, Chuck, that we're going to see another surge related to that rally. I mean, to me, it's understandable that people want to do the kinds of things they want to do. They want their freedom to do that. But there comes a time when you're dealing with a public health crisis that could involve you, your family, and everyone else, that something supersedes that need to do exactly what you want to do. I mean, you're going to ultimately be able to do that in the future, but let's get this pandemic under control before we start acting like nothing is going on. I mean, something bad is going on. I mean, we've got to realize that.
Clay, I just feel like you could have played that soundbite from Fauci, and he pretty much has played it every day for about 18 months now. It's been the same thing from this guy.
So what's fascinating about this to me is this Sturgis rally is mostly outdoors, right, in South Dakota, involving, for people who aren't really that familiar, a lot of motorcycle aficionados. No question at all about Barack Obama having an indoor party for hundreds of people for Dr. Fauci whatsoever. And to me, what this reinforces, and I know this is when the idea of mass gatherings were completely lost forever and for many people out there. I know you were early on the Fauci as a tyrant train.
Oh, yeah.
Train, to your credit,
I'm like the
Buck.
Conductor of the of
yeah,
that train.
You were the conductor of that train. But for many people, it was, hey, when you started to have protests against lockdowns and everybody came out and said these are very unsafe, particularly in Michigan against Gretchen Whitmer, and everybody came out and said these are unsafe, this is impermissible, this is not reliable from a health perspective. As soon as Black Lives Matter protests started in May, they were fine so that we had situational COVID, which is the same thing that effectively that New York Times reporter in the first segment we played who said that Obama had a sophisticated crowd, so things are going to be okay. As soon as you started arguing, well, some crowds are okay so long as what was being advocated was permissible or endorsable for that component. And by the way, this was all scientists who wrote pieces saying, well, crowds are fine. Hundreds of thousands, millions of people can take to the streets over Black Lives Matter protests. But the idea that anybody would show up for any other reason was impermissible. And it's just perpetuated and extended, Buck, to the point now where Fauci's still upset because, let's be honest, the Sturgis motorcycle people vote Republican.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
That's the reality.
And that's also why recently Lollapalooza had an enormous outdoor concert. I mean, you can see photos of it. I mean,
hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah, it looks like 100,000 people all gathered together for this massive. Now, it is outdoors, but let's all remember most of Sturgis is going to be outdoors as well.
Yes.
And of course, there's all these assumptions baked into it that you can see from the media. One, people that go to Lollapalooza tend to be left of center. They're libs. They might be vaccinated. Sturgis, those are MAGA Trump hat wearing motorcycle people. They're dangerous, Clay.
No doubt. It's just all so transparently false. And I know people are fired up about it. And you know what? Maybe you want to do something positive. And what you should do is recognize that we are right now almost 20 years since 9/11. And what you can do to help support those who have died and given their all for 9/11 is you can help America keep its promise to never forget by honoring heroes by donating $11 a month at T2T.org. Right now, we've got a 500-mile journey going on through six states in 42 days to honor the 9/11 fallen, and Frank Siller is doing an incredible job for Tunnel to Towers. He's joined by 9/11 families, veterans, first responders, and more. Again, so many people, including Frank's own brother, Stephen, 20 years later, help America keep and continue to never forget. Honor the heroes by donating $11 a month at T2T.org. Welcome back in. Clay Travis, Buck Sexton. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us as we roll through the Monday edition of the program. We're going to talk, giving you a little bit of a roadmap, by the way, of where we're headed. Dr. Marty Makary from Johns Hopkins will be with us at the start of the second hour. He has got a great editorial I'd encourage you guys to read. The Wall Street Journal today about how masks on school children don't work. There's no data to support it. And then at the top of the third hour, we are going to be joined by Tucker Carlson. Should be a lot of fun. That is what is coming down the road of the program here on the Monday edition. But in the meantime, Buck, we talked about this. We were forward thinking. You in particular have spent time over in the country, Afghanistan, as the United States prepares to pull out all of its last troops, and we're not even 100% out of that country yet, but already the Taliban has taken over vast segments of Afghanistan, and it really may well be a matter of time until it's like the United States was basically never there. And once more, we have created a fertile breeding ground for terrorists. Not a good option. We're going to have to leave at some point. We can't be there in theory forever. But as soon as you leave, it's like you were never there. Does anything that you've seen so far surprise you, Buck? And what happens now?
Nothing is surprising insofar as the overall trajectory of the deterioration. I mean, Afghanistan is plunging into the chaos vortex even more rapidly than was anticipated. There was an intelligence community assessment in June that said the Taliban would likely take over the country within 6 months. I think that's now a fair bet. I think you could even say that the Taliban may be on the outskirts of Kabul, essentially surrounding the final government holdouts by October. Maybe November. So they might not even make it to the end of the year. This is the ongoing blitzkrieg that they've had. It's not only rural areas. The Taliban has seized half of the country by all the best assessments that we have right now. But they've also seized a number of provincial capitals, places like Saripol and Talakan and Kunduz, all in the north. And Clay, that's significant because we all remember what happened after 9/11, 2001. We had U.S. Special Forces and intelligence personnel, CIA and others, who deployed to Afghanistan and worked with the Northern Alliance and tremendous U.S. air power to roll up the Taliban and kick them out. And they essentially were either killed or fled into Pakistan, the Pakistani safe haven. Well, guess what? They've learned a lesson. Now, instead of consolidating the Pashtun, which the Taliban is a Pashtun entity, Pashtun tribe, instead of consolidating first in the south and east of the country, which is their traditional Taliban stronghold and homeland, they're actually going up north into areas that had been our allies' home bases when we started this whole thing. So they're essentially eliminating the possibility of us having a replay of what we did before by seizing control first and foremost in the areas where they have the least amount of control. So they're seizing population centers. They're already on the outskirts of Kandahar, which is in the south, the second largest city in the country. They've had some major assassinations of government officials underway. Almost got the defense minister of Afghanistan about a week ago. Complex attack with a car bomb, numerous gunmen with suicide vests on. That's a classic tactic as well, right? So they go in, they shoot everyone they can, and then if they get cornered or if they run out of ammo or whatever, they decide to hit the suicide vest plunger. They killed 8, wounded 20 in that, but the defense minister wasn't home. Airstrikes and Afghan special forces have been able to blunt the offensive at some level, not to stop it, but to slow it down a little bit. But here's the huge problem we've got here, Clay. We've moved not only U.S. military presence down dramatically. We've only got a few hundred troops left in the country. It's going to be at basically zero except for the embassy here pretty soon. But we also have thousands of contractors. Now, that might not sound as much of a critical piece, but over 1,000 of those contractors were aerial maintenance personnel. The people that keep the planes and helicopters, the Blackhawks we've given the Afghans, keeps it flying up in the sky, right? Can't fly the plane, it's no use to you. Can't fly the helo, you're done. What are they going to do? The Afghans who are behind us are left behind are saying we can make basic repairs. But Clay, if they lose that close air support advantage, and then which they might within the next 60 days, now you're just talking about a village by village, city by city gunfight with the Taliban, the Afghan National Security Forces. It's going to turn into a rout pretty quickly. That's my concern.
That's all really well said. And I would say this as someone who is nowhere near as sophisticated. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there listening to us who are saying, okay, why should I care? Right? Because it's been 20 years and we've lost a lot of lives. And the answer would be the reason we went into Afghanistan was to prevent groups like Al-Qaeda from being able to be organized and plan attacks inside of the country. And so the question that I would have for you, Buck, as someone who knows Afghanistan pretty well, because again, you've been over there, you followed it, you worked in the CIA. Is there any reason to believe that Afghanistan is not going to, in short order, become a fertile breeding ground for terrorists one more time, allowing maybe it takes 8, 10 years, a generation for another attack to be planned in Afghanistan and implemented in the United States or elsewhere in a Western democracy? Is there any reason to believe that we have created a situation where that's less likely to occur again? Is there any reason for hope there?
Well, there is reason for a change in our thinking, I believe, about this, because when we went into Afghanistan and then the mission creep of nation state building and stabilization operations became, I mean, that's why we've been there for 20 years, right? This is, we've been trying to hold this country together. You know, yeah, we're not creating a Jeffersonian democracy. We all know that. But to have some semblance of a normal member of the international community operating as the nation state, the sovereign state of Afghanistan. But we've also seen that there can be nests of jihadist terrorists operating as within countries with some degree of safe haven. And we can, with strikes, particularly drone strikes, but also special operations and intelligence activities, keep them contained enough that we have not had. I mean, look, we've had a number of years here where you have not had a, I mean, and God forbid, you know, dare I say this out loud, knock on wood, but we haven't had a major mass casualty terror attack in a while now. Certainly on the scale of 9/11, I know we've had it. We could talk Pulse nightclub. We could talk some of the vehicular mass casualty attacks. I mean, there have been terror attacks, but a lot of those were actually homegrown extremists, right, who were radicalized by online propaganda or even what they call a remote controlled plot, where someone who's a foreign terrorist operative in, say, Yemen is telling an American online, here's how you do it, here's who you target. But putting that aside for a second, there are relative terrorist safe havens right now in Yemen, in the Sinai Peninsula, in northern Nigeria, in Somalia. I mean, you go down this list and we're not all constantly feeling like we're on the edge of an imminent attack. Now, that could change in a moment, and we all know that. But the hope here, Clay, is that with Afghanistan, with the amount of pressure we can put on it, both from a surveillance and an aerial asset perspective, we can make sure the Taliban knows that providing safe haven, for example, to Al-Qaeda again and allowing external plots will result in massive retaliation, the kind of which I'm not even sure we would talk about here on radio because it's so horrifying. But I think that's where we are. I think that's what we're looking to do here. Because if we, by the way, if the U.S. does not decide to go back in the next 6 to 12 months, I'd give the Afghan government, Ashraf Ghani and the Afghan National Security Forces, 10% shot they hold Kabul for more than a year.
This is one of those awful situations where there are no good options, right? We could hear, by the way, from people who served in Afghanistan what your thoughts are as this process unravels. 800-282-2882, 800-282-2882. We'll continue to talk about this. Dr. Marty Makary going to join us in the near future. In the meantime, if you're with AT&T, Verizon, or T-Mobile, you're paying too much for your cell service. Pure Talk, on the exact same network with the exact same towers as one of those big carriers, but for a heck of a lot less. In fact, Pure Talk can save the average family over $800 a year. And Buck, I've talked about this. My 13-year-old, he's a rising eighth grader. He's got his own iPhone 12 under the Pure Talk family. He loves it. And he gets an incredible offer where you can get unlimited talk, text, and 6 gigs of data for just $30 a month.
Clay and I are both customers. You should be too. Listen to this offer right now, okay? Because, you know, it's an offer that you shouldn't refuse. Unlimited talk, text, and 6 gigs of data, just $30 a month. Unlimited talk and text, folks. 6 gigs of data, $30 a month. That is a fraction of what I used to pay with one of my big carriers. Honestly, it's about a quarter
of what I was paying for a big carrier. So if you don't go over on data, by the way, they don't charge you for it. I mean, the customer service is also fantastic. John from Bowling Green, Kentucky wrote in and said their customer service was so respectful. Thank you for treating us as you value your customers, Pure Talk. It's absolutely true. From your cell phone, dial #250 and say Pure Talk. You'll save 50% off your first month. That's #250, say Pure Talk. You'll have the option to receive a one-time auto-dial text message from Pure Talk. Welcome back to the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. My, it is flying by today, as it always does. Remember, go to clayandbuck.com for the latest on everything we're talking about here. Plus, you get some insider access. Sign up for EIB 24/7. Clay and I posting vids there, photos, other things. And also, you have a special email address there for everybody. 800-282-2882 on the phone lines. We'll get to some calls in a second. But first, I just want to note that even some liberals, some of the libs out there, are getting tired with how dishonest the wokeness can be and what it means for critical issues of public debate. Bill Maher, who is sometimes a heterodox guy ideologically, he's a man of the left, but he does get tired of the insane wokeness and will sometimes say things that, I got to say, as a conservative, you go, yeah, he's actually right about that. Here he is on how wokeness will get people killed when it comes to the origins of COVID.
You said it doesn't get anybody killed. I think it does. Defunding the police, I think, came from wokeness, and I think it'll get people killed. Wait a second. Okay. The Spectator says that the New York Times refused to investigate, they call, the biggest story of our time. They're talking about where the virus originated. Maybe it was in the Wuhan lab. Mm-hmm. Because they suppressed efforts to probe the virus's origins, for among reasons, because they thought it was racist. You see, because everything is race, mm-hmm. come on, at the New York Times. And so the paper of record is not reporting what I would expect the paper of record to report, the accurate news. That is an example of the power of wokeness.
I mean, what an intellectual betrayal, Clay, for the New York Times. I mean, just for people who work in the information and allegedly journalism sphere to say we can't report on the truth of the Wuhan lab leak. Because racism?
It's the biggest story, maybe, in our lives, right? I mean, I don't think that's an exaggeration. Depending, I mean, there are people out there who are lived through World War II and have been through other aspects of American history that may be bigger. But for people out there that are 50 or younger, I would say, COVID is the biggest story of our lives and where COVID came from. And by the way, how to try to keep COVID from happening again is the biggest story of our lives. And the New York Times won't cover it because some of the details might be uncomfortable to them. I mean, this is like the whole thing with, you know, we're calling it the Delta variant now, but we can't even mention the parts of the world that viruses come from now because it might be racist to even suggest where they came from. I mean, this is madness.
We're going to have to rename all of them, too. We're going to have to rename Zika and Ebola and, you know, go down the list, right? Spanish flu, which actually wasn't even really in Spain. That's a whole other thing. But, yeah, let's get to it, because I know we want to take some calls from folks on a range of issues, but Afghanistan specifically. And we got Doug in Ohio who has, I will say, because I know what he's going to talk about, a brilliant point to make that I would totally wholeheartedly agree with. Doug, go ahead. What do you got?
Hey, guys, I just want to say, you know, I was in Afghanistan in 2012, and I had talked to guys that had fought the Taliban, had fought the Russians, had been there for 30 years fighting, and they said, until you fight Pakistan, there is nothing going on. Until you can stop the INI from funding the Taliban, this was never going to be a win. Yeah. It was a complete waste of time.
Yeah, the Pakistani ISI, the Inter-Services Intelligence Agency, has been playing a double game against us all along. We all know it. There's no way that they were not aware that bin Laden was just down the road from what the equivalent of Pakistan's West Point is, okay, in Abbottabad, named for a British colonel, I believe it was, back during the days when the Brits were fighting the Afghans. Doug, first of all, man, thank you for your service, and I just also want to say thank you for bringing up the critical point, which was true when I was in Afghanistan 10 years ago, that as long as the Pakistani, I mean, think about this, Clay, you're trying to do stability operations in a country where the idea is you put so much pressure through counterinsurgency on the bad guys, in this case the Taliban, that they effectively crumble, they have nowhere to go.
If they always can just run across the border, which they could and did, to not only a place where we can't get them, but where they'll be trained, where they'll be equipped, where they'll get money. That's what the situation was in Pakistan. It's like if we were fighting an insurgency in America against communists, you know, or if we were fighting like Red Dawn style against an invasion, but the bad guys could always come over the border from Mexico or Canada, you're never going to win.
Yeah, not only that, I mean, they think in terms of hundreds of years in Afghanistan. And that's just you heard people talk about that. I talked to a bunch of soldiers who've been over there as well. And that's what they came back with is, we think in terms of years, they think in terms of decades, they think in terms of generations. And they knew, based on what had happened with Russia, that sooner or later, no matter how powerful the group is that is coming into their country, they're going to leave.
Let's get to one more here. Ivan, another active duty. Ivan in Naples, Florida. How you doing, Ivan?
Hey, I'm doing good. How you doing today?
We're good, man. What's on your mind?
So I just want to say that I think the way we're pulling people out based on this administration is irresponsible. And I just say that because I did serve over there in Bagram in 2014, 2015. And I believe that Bagram Airfield is going to be one of the weakest points as soon as we get out of that place, right?
We handed it over, right, Ivan? I mean, we basically left in the middle of the night and it was picked exactly, over by yes. scavengers the next day.
Exactly. So ISIS, I think ISIS is going to get it over. I mean, I say within the next 3 to 4 months, I think that's going to be a good stronghold for ISIS, to be honest. I say it was irresponsible to do it that way. I mean, I believe we should get out, but not the way we're getting out right now.
Ivan, thank you for your service and thanks for sharing your perspective on this one. Clay, I'll tell you this. If there is a veteran out there, by the way, or active duty who wants to tell us, you know, how, short of you major U.S. military, you know, reintervention, we could stop this. I would really want to know because I haven't heard that from anybody. So I'm curious to see. But
this is why the biggest challenge is, right? We shouldn't be there forever. But simultaneously, as soon as we leave, it's like we've never been there at all. There is no win here, right? The balancing act is so difficult.
We got Dr. Marty Makary joining us here in just a few minutes to talk about, is there a medical basis for your kids to be masked up in school? And are there medical reasons not to mask up your kids in school? You know this is important to Clay. It's important to me. And I'm sure to all of you as well. We'll dive into that. Plus the latest on the budget, the Green New Deal nonsense, and more. That's coming up.
You're listening to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.